from KFNX News Talk Radio 1100. It's Chatterbox, where you'll find the latest news, interviews, and updates about the gaming world. The views and opinions expressed are those of the host, the guests, and callers only, and not necessarily those of KFNX News Talk Radio 1100. And now, here's your hosts for Chatterbox.
Welcome to the Chatterbox Video Game Radio Show. My name is Alon.
And my name's Ara.
We do this show every week. ChatterboxGameshow.com is our website. Our live chat room has been down for the last couple of weeks. I don't know who it is that's maintaining that.
Is it hackers? Is it the same people who are hacking Ubisoft?
No.
I hope not, because we're not the bad guys. You should go and hack Ubisoft.
I mean, it's just an IRC chat room that we embedded in the website, but I don't know. Like, maybe QuakeNet's just down and nobody bothered to change it, and I'm the only one who has access to the code to change it. I don't know. But nobody's like, hey, Alon, you should change it to this and this. We got the chat room set up somewhere else. That didn't happen. And since I haven't been involved in that, I don't. Anyway. But
what about our stalwart Amiculi? Isn't he, like, moderating the chat room all the time?
Well, since I can't access it, I can't tell.
Or, yeah, maybe we should, like, call him up. Or maybe if you're listening, you should call us up.
My friend Megadeth was also involved in that and probably knows about it. I should just give him a call.
Not the band. The friend.
No, the friend who goes by Megadeth, you know, online and in the chats.
64?
No.
Just regular.
Just regular.
Okay.
Regular strength.
I think I was confusing him with Megadeth 64.
All right. Well, I want to apologize to our listeners who had to listen to me last week, or at least in last week's episode, all sickly. Today, much more energetic. I was telling Ara that Tuesday was the worst day of the sickness. You know how your sickness will peak? It's bad, it's worse.
Tuesday night, 9:35 p.m.
Yeah. Well, it wasn't necessarily that time, but it was that day. And it felt like that time just because I was having to do something.
Yeah, and I felt like that time as well.
Yeah, I did not. I mean, I told you guys. I'm always pretty honest, but I did not want to be there. But I totally want to be here now. Very excited. You handed me one of the most interesting articles I've read in a very long time.
Which always surprises me because I show you something half the time I think it's really cool, and you're like, I don't care about this. Ara, why do you? Ara, justify to me why I should care. And then I hand you something else, and I think, yeah, it's all right, it's pretty cool. And then you're like, wow, this is the coolest thing ever. So,
in all honesty, you hand me a lot of crap. So that might have something to do with it. But this is good stuff. I think we just have varying interests in things. You like the cars, and I like the psychology the brain creepery.
If you choose to frame it that way, you may.
Yeah. I've brought you a lot of crap myself. I'm not trying to say that I'm innocent here. But anyway, get this great article from David Wong. You said you got it from where is it?
Cracked, right? Cracked.com.
Which I've certainly heard of, and I'm sure I've been there,
it's
but
like
I, don't,
a humor
I don't frequent
site.
It.
It's like a humor site.
Yeah. Right? This is not a humorous. I mean, it's funny.
I mean, it is humorous, but it's really more than that.
Unless he's making it all up. It's certainly, its intention isn't to be funny.
I don't think he's making it all up. It's about, basically, it's called Five Creepy Ways Video Games Are Trying to Get You Addicted.
So people listen to podcasts often because they don't like to read or because they have time when they can listen to things and not do much else.
Or they're bored or they're doing something else and their ears are bored.
Certainly. There's a million reasons. And I urge you, if you can find the time, it really would only take maybe 15 or 20 minutes. And I'm a very slow reader.
Wait, are you asking people to actually read something?
I'm not asking. I'm telling them that, you know, if they're interested in this show, they would probably be interested in this article. And we'll discuss it a little bit and they'll decide.
Do the people who listen actually have the ability to read words?
Well, that's the thing. If someone told me to read an article, you know, when I was listening to their podcast, I would totally not do it.
Because, like, we grew up in, you know, a time when there were, like, things like books, right?
Yeah, I still didn't read them.
But these days, I mean, like, highlights for children?
But you're reading it online, so it feels like a game.
Right.
Right, because there's probably some flash ads or something on the right side.
Right.
Anyway, go read it. It's called Five Creepy Ways Video Games Are Trying to Get You Addicted. And we're going to talk about it a little bit later in the show. A lot of funny points in it. And boobies are mentioned at least three or four times. So, I mean, the value is heightened by that alone. And if you read that, then you will better understand perhaps what we'll be discussing later.
Perhaps.
But in other totally non-video game related news, so I got engaged yesterday.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, like to be married.
Oh, wow. Congrats.
Yeah. So I just figured I'd mention that.
Didn't that happen? Didn't that happen like a year ago?
No, man.
No.
Okay. No.
That's cool.
Like I had to forge some way to present a ring. And...
Okay. Was there like a staging area you were in before, like pre-engagement or what?
That was just with this girl for a long time. Yeah. That was pretty cool and still pretty cool. And now you're like, all right, well, let's get married and continue to be cool. I just thought I'd mention it. This isn't a proposal. That stuff's already happened. I'm not like she doesn't listen to the show ever.
Right.
So
we could talk about whatever we want.
Yeah, there would be no value in me being like, honey, we've been together for 2 years. I love you so much. I totally want to be with you forever. You should marry me, right? Because she would never know. So I didn't go that angle. But anyway, deed's done. So ladies, you know, off the market am I. Anyway, I just figured I need to get that out of the way. So sometime in June, you'll get to do the show by yourself for a while.
That's cool. Well, okay.
Yeah. Like, I'm all quick about it. I was like, you want to just go get married now? There's a courthouse down the road. So, but she wasn't into that. She wants to, like, get friends and whatever and hang out.
Sure. I have a lot of experience being the best man, by the way.
That's fantastic.
Just so you know, I'm not going to say anything else. Just putting it out there.
I have never been. I'm actually so disgusted with the idea of tradition, like useless tradition, that I do not intend on having any sort of groomsmen. She may force it upon me, but
Well, me too, but I mean, you know, just cool. I got the experience.
Well, you're definitely invited to, you know, join us. But I think perhaps... the wedding should be done in costume rather than in any sort of formal attire.
Right. Well, you could always have a wedding like those weird wedding pictures that I saw on the internet once, where like everyone had like these weird like spray painted letters on T-shirts, and one of them's like, "I'm the best." Right.
that sounds pretty stupid.
Best man. I'm the best. You get it? He's a man wearing your T-shirt saying, "I'm the best." Yeah.
All right. Well, so. For anyone out there who's in like Vegas area or, you know, Phoenix area or something, the spots we're thinking about, really, we don't want to do like just a wedding somewhere. We want to just rent out a super luxury mansion place.
You could do a tongue-in-cheek Idiocracy style wedding where everything
Gatorade
is sponsored.
Everywhere?
Yeah, just everything is sponsored. You could make so much money. Imagine.
I'm not that famous. I don't think I could get things sponsored. But I mean, if you can pull that off, I'm open to it. Open to solicitation.
Think about it. You could pay for the photographer and the
hors d'oeuvres. That's one of the things. Another tradition, don't want a photographer. My friends will be there with cameras.
All with your sponsorship money.
Yeah, I don't know. Anyway, if you know of some luxury rental, or maybe you have one, let me know. I want to be able to sleep at least like 20 people in this place. So we get our friends from out of town to come hang out, and people who aren't from so out of town, they can just sort of hang out in Vegas. And yeah, it'll be good times. All right, so moving along to more relevant things.
Like video games.
Like video games, which will be played at said wedding.
All right, I got a couple quickies.
Let's do it.
A couple quickies. Okay.
Yeah, we got 3 minutes before the break.
Okay, so perfect amount of time.
I'm just making that up. I don't know if it's 3 minutes.
So now, right, remember way back when...
This is a sequel to what we talked about a long time ago.
Right. If you... Let's say your last name was Gaiman.
Yes.
Right? And not like Gamin, but like... Gay man.
Yes.
Right? Microsoft would boot you off of Xbox because you had the word gay in your name, right? Or Gaylord. Gaylord is an actual name.
That's true,
right?
Actually.
Right?
And a location.
Can't be called Gaylord. Got the word gay in it, right? Or Gaynor. Anyway, you see where I'm getting at, right?
What about Phil McCracken?
Like, probably prohibited, right?
Okay.
And so they had kind of this, you know, really explicit... you know, no tolerance policy, and now they've completely reversed that, like 180 degrees. So you are
perhaps from the outcry of the public,
perhaps. And so now you're free to explicitly label yourself as lesbian, gay, bi, transgender, or straight. Right? You can just freely express your sexual orientation in your gamertag profile, or perhaps even your gamertag.
I imagine there's still some sort of explicit things that aren't allowed, like, I like to take it up the pooper and perhaps some more colorful language.
They had better let you do that because, you know what, like, hey, you know what, if I'm turned on by trees or dismembered heads or dismembered goat heads or anything like that, I better be allowed to put that stuff on
but
it.
But it's the graphic nature of the description that I think would probably still be restricted.
Yeah, what if I put on there, I like to F dismembered goat heads?
Well, the F part probably...
Disgusting to you and me, right? But
only to me. I thought you were into that.
But
well, that's what you're telling me.
When I'm acting, I am. But
okay.
In real life, I'm not actually into that.
I didn't
that.
Realize you were in character.
Right. So to we think it's disgusting, but someone out there is turned on by nothing more than a dripping, bloody head of a goat that does not have a body.
I will take your word for that, sir, because I have not met that
man. You would be surprised what outrageous things people can get turned on by. You can get turned on by anything.
Not me, but okay.
Open your mind. Open your mind, my friend.
All right, thinking outside the box.
So that's right, outside the box.
Okay, well, bottom line, the Xbox Live people change their mind. They let you do that because a bunch of gay people got all pissed off.
Yeah,
so rightfully so.
So if you're listening, you know, maybe you have a proclivity that you haven't revealed to the public before, like, you know, you're turned on by like dandelions or something. Hey, you know, put that in your gamer tag profile. Let's see if you get booted off.
I don't think so.
Maybe something more interesting than dandelions.
Okay.
All right.
Moving right along with, what, like a minute left?
All right. Here's another little tidbit. Right? So we've been talking about – everybody knows about things like –
you've been wanting to talk about this forever.
I know. There's not a lot to say other than just mentioning it. Right? Like Metacritic. Everyone knows about Metacritic. Everyone knows about stuff like that. Right? So now there's a site that has reviews of – reviewers, and it's called Criticism. Ha ha ha.
So someone has to go rate these reviewers,
right? So I went on there, like,
or are they simply compiling a single reviewer's score
a couple weeks ago, and people actually rate reviewers, right? So I went on there, and unfortunately it's not been it's so recent that there's not a lot of difference between critic scores, and there's a lot of critics on there, but I don't know, this is going to be interesting. To my chagrin, right, but to be expected, the more popular names, i.e. the more well-known names, have higher scores than the less well-known names.
Yeah, that's
so
disappointing.
Yeah, it's kind of boring because it's like, well, okay, like that guy's name's out there more, so
is it a voting system? Like they get as many votes as they can, or it's a rating out of a specified number, like 5 out of 10?
I have no idea. But it's some kind of...
It should be a rating. I'm sure. I'm guessing that's what it is.
There is a rating, but I don't know how they computed it.
It's not a popularity scale.
It's kind of like you're rating the critics. So you can go on there and you can rate your favorite critics.
If
and
you want to see
them,
it, it's criticism.com, I suppose.
Criticism.com.
All right. Well, I mean, this was weeks ago that you checked it out, so who knows what's happened since.
Yeah. So maybe it's ballooned in popularity,
you know,
or maybe it's
in... One thing in terms of ratings that we discussed a long time ago was the ratings on Xbox Live for the games, and you're like, well, they're all really high. Every game is rated high, and it's rated a million times, no matter what it is.
Right.
The ratings seem to be leveling out. Like, you can go look at games that are rated poorly, and they're pretty crappy games. And they're,
right, but
better games.
I still think that they're...
That's
they're
probably
inflated.
Sweet.
They're inflated.
I mean, the people who are playing games like games, so they're going to rate them highly.
You can't say no, right? Well, I guess you could.
Oh, yeah. All
anyway,
the time.
Yeah. But I don't think that someone
would. All right. Well, we're going to break. Okay. We'll be right back.
Arizona's News Talk Leader, KFNX, AM 1100.
And we're back. It's Chatterbox Video Game Radio. Oh.
We could get actual echo.
Echo,
if you want.
Echo.
Okay.
So how about them Ubisofts?
Yeah, man. Well, I've been talking about them screwing up for years.
And you never relinquish an opportunity to continue to do so.
No, because I haven't seen them defend their honor in any way. They just continue to suck.
Well, they're defending something right now. I don't know if it's their honor.
Yeah, no, they just make bad decisions and make bad entertainment products repeatedly. So I'll let you take this one away. I'm sure everyone's heard about this already.
Okay, so everybody knows about, well, not everybody, but many of us know about Ubisoft's DRM, digital rights management stuff, where if you buy one of their recent PC games, right, you pretty much have to be online, connected to the internet, or the game won't work. Right? This is their way of making sure you didn't pirate. So, okay, here's the little...
Which is ironic, because the pirater's...
Right, so a little timeline here, right? So what happens? So the games come out with this special online DRM. Pirators crack it, right?
Yes. But what's annoying
within
is
within, like, what, a week?
They absolutely know with certainty that it will be cracked and will be cracked quickly when they release it. So they're really just doing this for the 1 week window for those people who need to get it right away.
I don't know if they really knew. I mean, you never underestimate the ability for a corporate entity to have its head stuck in the sand.
No, but I mean, you and I both have talked to developers who make PC games.
We know. Right.
And they know, the people developing the games know that they're going to be cracked.
I agree. The developers know. The people who are making the decision to enforce this style of DRM, not so sure if they understand the futility of this exercise.
So even so, let's go through our heads. Like, what would this meeting be like? And by the way, cracking the game in a week is a huge, like, a huge win for the game companies. It's usually distributed and cracked before the game even hits shelves.
Right, right.
So they've won by making
okay,
it a day.
So, yeah, because they did something different the first time.
Yeah.
So it took the hackers a
week. I don't know how long it took them this time. I don't know what happened because I haven't paid attention to Assassin's Creed or that other game. Assassin's Creed 2, that is. But let's say it took them a week to crack it. That is a huge win for them. And let's say they were able to predict this huge win of a week. What they're doing is saying, we want to put in this DRM, which is horribly frustrating for the people who get the game for real. And the only people this will influence to actually buy the game is the very, very small group of people who would normally pirate it, but who want the game so badly that they will instead pay money for it because they can't wait just 1 week for the game.
Do you really think that's a lot of people?
That is a very, very tiny amount of people.
I agree.
Because the people who are pirate it will pirate it.
Right.
And they will wait because they don't care because they don't want to spend the money.
Right.
And they know that it's coming out.
I think that's what you just brought up is the major fallacy. And it's not false, but the opposite of it is the major fallacy of when people talk about things getting pirated, especially the way the companies frame it. It's like there's this assumption that if only people could only get the product by purchasing it, then we would, make so much more. But the thing that they seem to discount incorrectly, in my opinion, is that all these people who are pirating, just like you said, right, they are not going to spend money on the game. They're not going to spend money on the game if they can pirate it. They're not going to spend money on your game if they can't pirate it, period.
Exactly. And I think you would actually, if you could somehow create a magical solution where people couldn't pirate your game and they had to pay for it, you would certainly get a greater return on it. But it wouldn't be nearly the number of people who pirate it.
No, it would
buying
be,
it.
It would be really interesting to
maybe
find
5%.
Out. Yeah, what that percentage is.
It's probably a fraction of 1%.
I think it's probably pretty small. I wouldn't wager to guess how small. But the funny part is that all pirating statistics seem to assume that ratio is like 100%.
Oh, yeah. They say, we've lost $100 billion because people pirated our game and we should have made $60 a pop. It's like, no. If it wasn't pirated, then you would have made $3 because that's who would have bought the game. That one guy.
Right. So getting back to the Ubisoft timeline.
So this DRM is hugely intrusive. If you can't connect to the internet, if you're simply not connected to the internet, you can't play the game.
Right.
So what happens?
So over the weekend, right? Guess what happened? A bunch of people tried to play the game, and oh no, Ubisoft servers are down. Which
Why would they be down?
So who knows why they're down? They're down, and people can the product that they paid for, right? They can't play it because the servers are down. Now, initially, Ubisoft reported, we're having a lot of traffic, whatever. And then I guess on Monday or a couple of days ago, another section of the company said, we've been attacked by hackers. We're getting, multiple denial of service attacks. And apparently there's been more than one. There's been at least two, right?
Yeah.
And so the pirates are just having a field day with this, which is
what's slightly
kind of
annoying
fun.
Is that I'm sure it's people wanting to make a point that this DRM is crappy.
Right.
Like intentionally attacking
right.
the servers to say, don't do this
but
again.
It's almost like trying to make a point by pretending your Prius can't stop accelerating.
Yeah. We were talking about that before the show. Neither of us think the thing is real. Yet I got an email from my mom today saying, hey, careful in your Prius. I'm sure you've heard about that thing in San Diego.
Be careful. don't walk around with gum on issue.
Yeah. I forgot how to put my car in neutral. So anyway, yeah, this all it does is hurt people, and the pirators or whoever it is, who I'm sure it is that's attacking them, like, kind of a dick move. But at the same time, like, I get it. Make the point. Maybe they won't do it again. But it's not the right way to go about it. Like, let them screw themselves. And you know, you don't have to be a part of that. But yeah, it was a bad move to begin with. It's been proven to be a bad move, even if it was probably at the hand of the people trying to demonstrate that it was a bad move. This sort of DRM is just silly. And it's why Apple moved away from it. Apple seems to be like the forward thinker of the world. And I mean, they're not making games with DRM, right? But they had DRM in their music, and they're like, we're going to get rid of that.
Right. Well, they tried, right? They'll be first to try something crazy like that, I think. And then,
but they've been successful. Right? Like, people could pirate music this whole time, whether you bought it from Apple or not.
So you don't think that they've stopped doing it because it's...
They didn't stop doing it. It's still there.
Oh, I thought you just said they stopped doing it.
No. They did it, and they're still doing it. Oh, now, they charge more now, but they're doing it, and I don't know why it's fair to charge more. I mean, it's, people buy it, they buy it. It's all because of convenience. But what's funny is, in Apple's situation, they made something hugely convenient, a really easy way to get what you want, which in their case was music and apps, right? But basically, music was the model. And so it's convenience that made the purchase. And now what Ubisoft is doing is, for the people who are willing to purchase it, regardless of any additional convenience,
right? You don't.
They are now inconvenienced.
Right. They're not offering you anything, right?
So. Yeah, it's really, really silly. And this, I mean, this is an argument that goes on. And anytime someone talks about video games on the podcast, like us or anybody else, it's just. I mean, we could beat the dead horse over and over and over, but this is just a great example of why silly.
Let's talk about another horse to beat for a little bit. So as you know,
UAT.edu is that horse.
Okay, so that's not the horse I was thinking of, but
really, no. Yeah. See, I thought we were on the same level. University of Advanced Technology, a wonderful educational institution in the area. And I think they might have something to do with Comic-Con, Phoenix Comic. Maybe they're sponsoring or doing something there. I just happened to cross the Comic-Con site today.
That's cool.
I don't know for sure if they are. Don't hold me to that. But they're probably involved in some way. They're certainly involved in a lot of stuff in the Phoenix area, and you should go to their website, uat.edu, to learn about the programs that they're involved in, as well as the educational options that they have for you.
So that was like more like a small spotted pony, not the horse I was thinking of.
What horse are you thinking of?
So, as you know, I like Forza a lot, right? So
yes.
I've been playing Forza 3, and so... I was
it's coming packed in a bundle soon, by the way. Forza 3 and Halo ODST.
Yeah. So when you buy the game new, right? So this is another technique that the game companies use to basically increase their sales, specifically their new game sales, and to combat another thing that they hate, which is used game sales, right? And so if you buy the game new, it comes with a code where you can unlock like a bunch of stuff, right? And so recently, right, the game's been out for several months, but recently now, they've put these items on their marketplace, so you can buy them separately, right? So this is very interesting. This is not just Microsoft. A bunch of companies are trying this, right? So you can go, and if you bought the game used, right, like, you know, pay like, I don't know, $6, $7, $8, $10, and you can get all the content that would have come with the game new online, right? So in this way, they can collect more money from used game sales, right? Because every new used game buyer is potentially a customer for this quote, exclusive content, right? Here's the rub, right?
Are you speaking about something hypothetical?
No, this is happening. This is actually happening.
Have we named an actual game this is happening in yet?
Forza 3.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
I didn't realize we were still talking
anyway,
about Forza 3.
Anyway, I'll give you guys the rub when we come back because that music's playing again.
All right, we'll be right back.
It's me, Mario. You're listening to Chatterbox Video Game Radio. It's a number one. Woohoo!
We are so back, and we're going to talk about Forza 3. So Forza 3, when you buy it new, comes with a code, much like the copy of Civilization Revolution that I had.
Sure.
Little code so you can buy something.
Well, you get.
Well, you get something that you would normally be able to buy.
Right. But what the funny part was is that you couldn't purchase it online at all, right? For the 3-4 months that the game was initially out.
It was only downloadable via code.
Yes. So nobody could have it, right? So recently, maybe 3-4 weeks ago, they were like, okay, now we're going to release all this stuff that you could only get by buying the game. Now we'll release it for purchase. But if you bought the game new, you already have it. So there's a little downer there when I first saw the release, because like, wow, there's new stuff for Forza 3 released. Oh, it's not new stuff. It's what I already have. So that was kind of funny.
This brings a thought. What if you were to sell a game from now on? They just say, we're going to sell games at $40 a piece, and you need to buy the unlock code for $20 on Xbox Live. So
or
whether
you
buy it used or new.
What if you don't want to buy the unlock code?
Well, you don't play the game. The game purchase is $60, but it's in two parts. One that's digital, but doesn't involve download time.
I don't think that's going to fly, dude.
I'm telling you that I wouldn't want it, right? But this is a potential solution.
Yeah, maybe you should work for Ubisoft with
sales.
Tactics like that.
No, this is the sort of thing Ubisoft might do. And say, okay, we're going to eliminate the DRM, or like the hassle-ish DRM, but if you want to play the game, just pay $20 and it'll just a very small file.
I bet you that was probably considered, but I think that will just totally backfire, because the consumer gets put into a spot where they've partially paid for the game and they have to jump through hoops to pay for the remainder and to get the remainder. This way, you kind of have to jump through hoops, but the hoops are optional, right? So you can. Even if you buy the game used, you can totally enjoy it just as it is. But if you want that extra content, you have to buy it online. Here's the rub, okay? What do you get? Like, what is this extra stuff that you get?
Okay? I'm certainly curious about that.
I'll tell you what it is. It's a bunch of test tracks from Forza 2 or earlier, okay? Lame-o. Bunch of other test tracks. Still lame-o.
What does that mean, test tracks?
Like, well, there's two sets of them. There's like a gigantic oval that's like a million miles long. There's like a bunch of straights. And then there's a couple.
Wait, how is one straight different from another straight?
Well, they're of different lengths.
You're kidding me.
Okay, I'm just going off memory here, all right? Give me a break. So, the other set of tracks is a bunch of like, really, really tight, windy tracks, right? Of varying length. They're all actually in the same area, right? They're all just like, but they're, anyway, they're old. They're not new content. They're basically, they've been in the other games.
Okay.
And then you get a track pack, which is like 10 cars, right?
Wait, is that a track pack or a car pack?
Sorry, car pack. Car pack. Okay. So here's the thing. At least on a personal level, the value of all these things is like almost nothing. There's like, if you have these items, right? No new events in the game get unlocked. I mean, some of the cars are kind of interesting, but they're nothing that's totally like, oh, I got to have this car, or my game's just not going to be the same kind of thing. In a game where you have like several hundred cars as it is, right? That even further devalues just getting a few extra cars. So the interesting thing is that if I bought this game used, right, if I had not bought it new, I would be not motivated whatsoever to buy this extra stuff. I just wouldn't care. I couldn't care less. So
yeah.
I was thinking about it the other day, like, why would they do that, right? And I almost think that it's kind of like a ploy by the developer to resist pressures from the publisher, because the developer, I think, wants to supply a complete as-is game that anyone can play, right? Not these like weird like pieces that, you know, like, you know, the developer doesn't want to say like, if you buy the game new, you get all 10 levels, but if you buy it used, you get levels 1 through 5, and then, you know, or 1 through 8, and then you have to buy the last two levels, right? The developer doesn't want to do that. They want to just have a nice self-contained, encapsulated experience that works. On the other hand, I can totally see the publishers wanting to do that kind of split. And so I'm just speculating, I'm imagining in my head that under pressure to adopt this kind of model from the publisher because the publisher wants to recoup so-called lost profits from used game sales, that they're imposing this kind of structure on the developer, and the developer is attempting to kind of ameliorate this imposition by just basically making sure that the extra stuff does not significantly impact the game experience.
That makes sense. So that's sort of a silent gift from the developer. Like, don't waste your money on this crap.
That's what it feels like to me. You know, I mean, call me crazy, but
so does this upset you?
Well, see, on the one hand, I'm upset because all that extra stuff is taking up lots of data on my hard drive in my Xbox. I've got like 6 gigs dedicated to Forza 3 stuff, which is crazy.
But you could always just delete it. Well, but you're a purist and you want
to
have it all.
Well, I could, but I mean, you know, while I'm playing the game, right, I'll just have it on there just so, you know, I can just, in case I want it, it's there.
Yeah, I know what it's like.
Even
though you won't want it.
If I have it, I'll put it on there if I already have it, you know. But if I don't have it, I'm not compelled to go procure it, you know. So there's that. So I'm a little glad, right, that I didn't have to, if I had bought it used, go buy more to get a more complete or a complete feeling game. That I'm happy about. What I'm not happy about is that it's kind of advertised as extra stuff when it's like really lame extra stuff. So I'm kind of, you know.
Luckily, they don't have to classify the type of extra stuff.
I'm kind of two minds, right? But normally, I mean, they don't have to classify it, right? There's not like a rating system, right? But when.
That'd be awesome if there was actually an official rating system that rated things as awesome or sucks.
I mean, it's just kind of tantamount to, you know, the horse armor thing, right? It's like, you know, it's like, okay, you can get this, but like, what does it really do for you? And it's just
well,
seems...
it makes you look pretty.
Right,
but
right.
Does it keep away video game orbs?
Right. No, it doesn't do that. So it's just as valuable as a diamond ring, I guess. But I always feel disappointed when there's things that I can buy online and all my choices are lame, right? And so there's that part of it too.
Yeah, it's an interesting tactic, and I certainly like the businessman in me. Likes the idea of trying to solve the puzzle of, you know, get the used player to give me money. But the gamer in me doesn't want to touch that and thinks everything should be on the disc. And, you know, I should never have to go online for any
right.
part of my game except online play, not online gathering of data.
Right. But I have other problems with that product, not the least of which being that online play is about 100 times more fun than offline play. And the material rewards for online play are about 100 times less than offline play. So figure that one out.
Well, there's a lot of potential cheating online. You wouldn't want only the cheaters to be getting whatever it is, whatever
right.
reward
well, that's
is.
Interesting, right? So they try to suppress cheating. They try to be conservative, right? And the consequence of that is that you just can't make a lot of money playing online because... the money amount of money that you
virtual
make is,
money you're talking about in-game money.
Right. It's basically proportional to like the amount of distance you travel. And offline you just make so much more, but the races are just totally lame-o boring. So
why? Just because they're computer opponents?
Yeah. That's exactly the reason why.
Are they too easy or?
It's not. I mean, part of it is because they're too easy, but you can always basically just drive a sufficiently crappy car to make it harder. But the problem, nobody's ever solved this problem. I mean, they're getting really like steps, very, very small increments closer. But the main problem with a lot of racing games is that computer opponents do not behave in interesting ways. They just don't. They either behave in unfairly boring ways or fairly boring ways, right? The great thing about driving online is that people are so unpredictable. And I'm not talking about the griefers. You know, even people who are trying to legitimately play, you know, they'll make mistakes. They'll, you know, they'll biff a corner. They'll take a bad line. They'll crash. You know, these are all really, really exciting things that, like, Grid kind of does it, but they do it, like I said, it's a very incremental thing, right? So in Grid...
I'm surprised it's that hard because you could just add, like, a certain amount of randomness within a threshold. So, like... If the perfect drive line is, you know, this line, which the listeners can't see.
You could, and they do that.
You vary from that line so much.
I think the problem is that they do it in ways that are too subtle for the player to really notice. And
sometimes humans make just wildly dumb mistakes.
Yes. And I think that it might be a consequence of the developers. They're so ingrained in the product, right, that they small variations in driving, they notice, right, and they think are big. But to an average player, it's so minute, it's not even noticeable. You know, so yeah, players, they do crazy things. They take corners awesome sometimes. They totally screw them up other times. You got to go around them. Positions change more often. It's, I don't know. I mean, I guess it's the Turing test for racing games is what it amounts to.
Sounds like it, actually. Anyway, we're back to break. We will have one more segment where we talk about this creepy ways video games are trying to get you addicted article, which I love. We'll be right back.
We are back. It is Chatterbox Video Game Radio.
That is what we are. Don't forget, chatterboxgameshow.com is the website. One day we'll have that chat room back up and running. I say that every week.
One day.
I say it every week. I got stuff to do. I got this whole wedding thing. Yeah. Buying a house. It's crazy. Anyway, another thing I'm doing is reminding you to go to uat.edu, the website for the University of Advancing Technology, because you should. Now, I promised we'd talk about this article, Five Creepy Ways Video Games Are Trying to Get You Addicted, which is great. Ara wants to talk about a letter that someone emailed us. Hopefully we'll be able to get past this in just a minute or two.
Because we love letters so much.
And, we do.
And it's so enjoyable hearing from our listeners.
And it's true. It's just that we have such a limited time. People always remind us, why is your show so short? And I don't know. I think 45 minutes is long enough. But anyway.
They must be playing WoW.
Yeah, and they're used to long hours.
Yeah. They've got 8 hours to care.
So there's the standard, I love your show, I want to have your babies, I love you guys so much, you're really, really, really great. I discovered LPs, which are, I guess, is short for Let's Play. People on YouTube and iTunes record themselves playing games with narration, and it's kind of like a director's commentary movie in a way, or director's commentary in a movie. This gets into the discussion of narrative gameplay, which I don't know if I agree with. Or at least not with the way he's wording it.
Let's just push through the end here.
What do you think about some games just being movies? And I think he means, what do you think of watching people play games? So to you, it's like a movie.
That's what I think too, because...
Otherwise, it doesn't make sense.
And otherwise, it's a much broader topic that we don't want to talk about right now.
Well, we've talked about the last 2 months straight.
Right, exactly. So this is kind of interesting, right? Because he's proposing basically like the concept of gameplay as spectating.
Yes.
You're watching someone play, and the guy playing is narrating at the same time, which makes it more interesting than him just not talking.
Well, and it is sort of brought home to me, because there are times...
I've seen people do this on, like, 4chan. This guy will put up a post, and be like, I'm playing Contra now. Here, go to this link and watch me play Contra. And a bunch of people go and watch him play, and then, like, 20 minutes later, they're like, okay, what are you going to play next?
I have not seen that, but I don't hang out on 4chan. What I can tell you is that I have a radio show where I talk about video games. And and so I'm often, like, a new game comes out, and I just want to be able to speak intelligently about it, like, have some relevant discussion. And so if I watch someone play a game, I can discuss, you know, themes on the storyline, and I can say, hey, let me control that for a minute, and I'll just feel the controls for a couple of minutes, but I won't have to play the game. Then I can watch somebody else play. And so I can sort of understand what the game's about without actually playing it. But I wouldn't do that for entertainment. I wouldn't do it as actually the fun of playing a game. I would want to play the game.
Right.
I do that because I have a very special reason.
Yeah, but what if he's really good?
If the player is really
good?
Yeah,
what if he's like really like effing awesome?
Well, then there's that. But that's only if I've also played the game, so I can appreciate the skill with which he plays the game.
Because the funny thing is when I was much younger, right? I'd go to my friend's house, or I'd be around friends, and we're playing a game, and I'm playing, right? And they don't want to play. And they're usually like, I want to watch you play. I don't want to play, which I always thought was kind of funny.
I've heard that before, yeah.
Yeah, and so they want to watch me play because, like, I'm good. Like, they don't perform well in the game, right? So they don't want to play because they'll just die in the same hole 20 times. But it's much more entertaining to them to watch a skilled player actually do all these calisthenics and things and on the video game screen. And yeah, it's kind of like, you're, I mean, it's like it's the video game as a spectator, as a sports spectator.
Well, I can understand when the game is like storyline based. Like you hear all these stories about usually the girlfriend sitting with the boyfriend as he plays through an RPG, right?
Right.
Because you're feeling the storyline with the person. That's one thing, right? When there's narrative in games, that makes sense.
Right.
But for a Mario game, I would intentionally not watch someone play because I would want to experience it for myself. And I'd get really frustrated because that person would probably not play to, you know, my expectations.
Well, that's what I'm saying. What if they were like a million times better than you?
Well, so when it's, like I said, when it's a game I've played and I can appreciate their skill, like the most demonstrative example for me is when I was at PAX several years ago and they were showing just people playing games very well, like, for whatever reason. The guy who's like number one in Geometry Wars was there and he played and I was like, oh, wow. You can just go and get rack up literally millions of points in that game, which is something that I've done like maybe once, just getting past 1 million, and never die. And this guy just could go on and on and on forever. And so how do you do it? Like, what's the trick that basically breaks the game? What do you know? What can you know in that game that suddenly makes it just too easy? And I'm still not to that level. There's no one particular trick, but watching him do it was like, I just learned a lot in five minutes how to get better at that game. And it's because I was then able to go back and perform better myself. But I still didn't get like genuine entertainment just watching. It was more awe and education.
Right.
And so certainly I was entertained in that moment, but it's not something that I can continually do because, you know, even the player got bored doing that over and over.
I feel different ways just depending on my state of laziness at the time.
Yeah, certainly. All right, so now I want to move past this and back to what I said to talk about. This certainly guaranteed we'll not have enough time to cover this with the depth that I would want to. But as I said, it's from David Wong at crack.com, you say. Article is 5 creepy ways video games are trying to get you addicted. And I'm just going to mention the 5 if I can actually find all the bullet points.
They're all kind of basically just subpoints of the main one, right? Which is that there are certain game techniques that basically reduce the game to a digital virtual Skinner box.
Yeah, he's definitely saying there are these psychiatrist people or mind study people who've decided what can get you to keep playing, even if the game is not fun. Like I've said on the show millions of times, WoW does not look fun to me. World of Warcraft looks boring, and I will never play it.
I've experienced this. I'm sure you have. You know, there's definitely been moments in games where you're compelled to do something, but it's not, and I resist the word fun, but it's not fun, but it's more than that, right? It's just, it's not intrinsically satisfying. Like, that's, I think that's a better way to put it, right? The activity itself is not a satisfying activity. You're only satisfied because you have some either obligation to get something at the end, or you want the end, right? But the process of getting the end is just completely retarded.
Yeah, and you could argue that achievements are a good example of this. Some achievements in Xbox.
Achievements are a great example of this. And I actually, this article specifically was very educational for me because even though I've thought about this subject a lot, it phrased achievements in terms that I've always...
Did it mention achievements? I didn't even get through all of it. I missed the last
couple pages.
I
don't remember if it was this or if he just gave a link to that I subsequently read. But basically, yeah, achievements are like...
it's total metagame.
It's not just like metagame, right? It's like it's a total in the terms of like what Jonathan Blow has said, right? About it just makes you do stuff, right, for the only purpose to just get these points that don't mean anything, right? It's just a completely, you don't learn, I mean, some of them maybe you might learn something from, right?
But some of them are just like play 1,000 matches online. You know, 1,000 matches with someone, whatever.
Right.
What's great is
right.
Then when it's broken and the counter doesn't work, like in friggin' Catan, because I want those achievements for no good reason.
Right. But why do you want them? And this pisses me off because, you know, like at DICE a couple of weeks back, right, this guy's like, oh, we're going to have real-life achievements where you get points for, you know, I don't know, like brushing your teeth. And it's like, is this what compels me to get up in the morning so I can get points for brushing my teeth?
It's just,
what about brushing your teeth so you don't get rotten teeth? How about that?
It's just the completionist in me, you know, the wants to get everything. Okay, right. No, I'm good at this game. I play this game a lot. I want to have all of the points.
This is human nature. You know, I don't think it's necessarily just the completionist, but it's this kind of just this hoarding tendency that a lot of us have. You know, there's You know, I'm
well, you can't feel like you're the best or that you've done everything you could do until you have all of the points that are
right,
defined as points.
Right. Like even gamer score. Okay, gamer score, right, on the face of it is a specific metric. It's quantitatively saying you are 26,500.4 points good at Xbox games, right? The problem is
I like to refer to it as a thorough, not good.
Right. Well, that's
you just have this tenacity level.
That's the point, right? Is that if you really look at it, what is it measuring? It's not measuring anything other than your compulsion to explicitly go after activities that earn you the points, many of which have nothing to do with your skill.
What's funny, on the macro, certainly it says nothing about your skill. On the micro, though, and in certain examples, it does. For instance,
like maybe 10, 15, 20%. And the other thing that's insidious about it is that a lot of developers and publishers use this system, this meta system, as a way to get you to play and try modes that you wouldn't otherwise.
But that's good because some people miss out on something by not playing them.
No, but I don't think it's good because, like, for example, in Forza, right? It's like, okay, I get 10 points if I make a, you know, if I make a video in the game. I don't want to make a video in the game.
I'm with you there.
You know, you're going to give me these 10 nothing points? Like, I'm not even going to do that.
All right. Well, guys, we did not touch on this nearly as much as I wanted
We should.
We're going to bring it back.
Yeah, we should bring it back.
Bring it back next week. Okay. So I'm going to let you hold on to this hour because you're the keeper of the documents. But meanwhile, go read it at crack.com. David Wong, 5 Creepy Ways Video Games Are Trying to Get You Addicted. Really insightful and interesting. So give yourself 15 minutes to read through it. It's, I don't know. It's even got pictures that I don't have in front of me because it's printed.
And kudos to the Cracked.
Yeah. All right. Well, we'll be back next week, everybody. Thank you for listening.
Good night, guys.
You've been listening to Chatterbox Video Game Radio. Tune in next week for more tips and info and the latest and greatest in video gaming. And remember, all your base are belong to us.